If you love the History Extra podcast, then please do leave us a review. It helps people find us, which helps us to keep making the show. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the History Extra podcast. Fascinating historical conversations from BBC History Magazine and BBC History Revealed. Was ancient paganism a religion of bloodshed, savagery, and ignorance, or a complex faith system of the Romans and Greeks? Why were pagans fascinated by the divinity of nature? And why did paganism capture the imagination of the Romantics? Speaking to Emily Briffitt, Professor Ronald Hutton answers your questions on the complex history of paganism, from difficulties of definition to recent revivals and popular misconceptions.
Hello to you. It's a real pleasure to be chatting with you today, Ronald.
It's a real pleasure to be chatting back, Emily.
So I think the best place for us to start is with a question from Instagram from Claire Munro 94, which is, what is paganism?
Paganism is the umbrella term used by scholars these days for the pre-Christian religions of Europe and the Near East, those that were around when Christianity first arrived.
So following on from this, what exactly is the origin of the word pagan, paganism? And when did it first start being used?
The origins of paganism are probably never recoverable, simply because prehistoric people didn't leave writing, and only some of them left art or sculptures. And what they're trying to show us in these is often very hard to decide. You know, if you get a figurine, is it a woman? Is it a priestess? Is it a goddess? A lot of how you see it's going to depend very heavily on which of those three choices. Or is it a doll? Or is it a spirit? Is it something altogether different? Have we got it completely out of context? Some people think that religion is something which evolves. In other words, there's no religion in humanity until a few thousand years ago, just a vague sense of a spirit world. It's possible. I don't actually see how we can ever prove that. So all we can say is there may have been something to which we would give a name if we knew it before paganism. But as far back as we go, paganism is all we can see in the remote European past. The word paganism first started being used of pre-Christian religions by the early Christians themselves. It was well established by the 4th century after Jesus's time. And it was only recently that historians came to a kind of agreement on what it actually meant. Round about 1800, the idea came in that it meant a rustic, a yokel, a hillbilly, a country dweller, at a time when the towns had mostly gone Christian and the old religions were confined to the countryside. This doesn't work. In the 1980s, a historian called Robin Lane Fox pointed out that it was already being used by Christians of the old religions when the towns were mostly not Christian yet, so it couldn't mean a country dweller. And after about 1990, a consensus was agreed that it means simply the religions of the pagus or pagus, that's the local unit of government. In other words, the local, the rooted religions, the old religions, as opposed to the brash new pick up and carry, go everywhere religion of Christianity.
So can we say that it was based in religion, this term, then?
Yes, it is a thoroughly religious term.
So Alan Pollock on Twitter has asked, did Christians invent the concept of paganism? And was this the only word that they used to describe people other than Christians?
Christians certainly invented the term paganism in order to describe people who weren't Christians. Until that time, there wasn't any polarity between or antagonism between religions. And so there was no need for a general term for a different, an other, a wrong kind of religion. It was Christianity that brought in this concept. But it certainly wasn't the only term that Christians used for people who weren't Christian. It was used by those whose main language was Latin. Those whose main language was Germanic used the term heathen instead. And later on, Latin speakers used the term infidel. And there were some who were deeply rooted in biblical language who used the term Gentile, meaning people who weren't the true believers, taken over from the Old Testament.
So Susie1340 on Twitter and Rosemary D. Kelty on Twitter as well, they've both asked, did the word pagan have a negative connotation in the early years of Christianity?
Paganism has always had a negative connotation to Christians. It was coined to mean people who are wrong, people who haven't got the point, haven't got the message, haven't been converted, the others. And so although it's sometimes used in early days neutrally, in other words, these people are not bad in themselves, just got the wrong religion, there's always been a stigma attached to it. Only recently, the last few hundred years, has it become redeemed by people who have dropped out of Christianity or never had Christianity and are looking for older traditions.
What groups were included under the banner of paganism? Could you give us a little bit more detail on this?
Anybody was a pagan to early Christians who wasn't Christian, but it included the peoples from the Near East, the Egyptians, the Mesopotamians, the Syrians, the Palestinians. It included everybody in old Europe, from the Greeks and the Spanish through to the people of Gaul, that's now France, the British, and the Scandinavians and Germans. That's an enormous range of people. And I haven't even put in those from the Maghreb, that's now Algeria, Morocco, Libya.
Crusading Fish on Instagram has asked about how the different Abrahamic faiths reacted to the presence of paganism. But I guess this is a really difficult question to ask, because some of those other faiths other than Christian were probably included under the pagan banner.
Well, paganism is a Christian concept. And so Christians would react to paganism as something that needs to be removed. And pagans would react to the experience of being called pagan by starting to have a sense of common identity. And as pagans live alongside Christians and are stigmatized by them and are eventually persecuted by them, they do see themselves as embodying things in common, which formerly they'd never really thought about or realised. So there's a kind of general self-conscious paganism around among intellectual pagans by about 400 odd years after the coming of Christ.
Do we see any consistent core strands of belief, practice or ritual between these different groups, between pagans?
There are three things that really distinguish pagans from Christians, apart from not being Christian. One is that they tend to believe in a lot of different goddesses and gods, even if some of them think that they're all reflections of one big central being. They still have different faces, and they include the feminine. There are goddesses as well as gods, a goddess as well as a god. Second is that nature is seen as something inherently divine. It has divinity within it. It's spiritually embodied. It's animate. It's got live spiritual forces actually within it, as opposed to being something created by something outside it or somebody outside it. And the third difference is that pagans don't really believe, most of them, that goddesses and gods give commandments or morals to humans or give them rules or monitor their behavior. Indeed, to many pagans, divine beings aren't terribly interested in humans. They got their own stuff to do, and you need to attract their attention.
Would you mind maybe giving us a few particular examples from maybe particular groups of these types of things?
A classic example of a pagan relationship with a deity would be that a pagan would not bother about deities most of the time. There'd be magistrates, sometimes priestesses or priests, to carry on regular rituals to keep the deities honoured. But otherwise, the deities are not your business and vice versa. But if something goes wrong for you, you already want something, then you choose a goddess or god who's really expert in that particular thing, and then you will make them an offer. You'll say, if I manage to win the heart of the woman I love, O Venus, then I shall build an altar to you, and I shall burn expensive incense on top of it so you can enjoy the fragrance. And then you wait to see what happens, and if the love of your life throws her arms round you, you build the altar to Venus, you burn the incense, and you put an inscription on the side of the altar explaining why you've done all this. It's a whole opposite belief system from thinking that you're created and monitored by a deity who then scores you according to how well you're behaving and decides the fate of your soul as a result of that.
Okay, on a similar note, what about perhaps lifestyle? Are there any common threads shared between pagans about lifestyle choices?
There were no common threads between ancient pagans on lifestyle choices. But most of them worried a great deal less about certain things than Christians did, because many of them had no sense that what happened to their soul after death reflected what they did in life. They were more concerned about the law and being good neighbours than about religious ethics. And also, on the whole, Christians worried a lot more about sex than pagans did. There were pagans who were just as celibate or as austere as many Christians, but there was from the beginning a strong strain in Christianity which felt the world was coming to an end, that matter was inherently rather evil and suspect, that the world was a place that had gone wrong, and the best we could hope for was to get out of it and get to heaven.
So we've spoken a little bit about the word pagan having negative connotations for Christianity. But one of the common themes that listeners have picked us up on, Roberta Alessandra on Facebook, Crusading Fish on Instagram, and Diego Morgado on Twitter have all asked, were elements of paganism absorbed into the Christian faith in these earlier years? Perhaps festivals, rituals, beliefs, anything like that? Or
lots of things got absorbed into Christianity from paganism. Physical things, the basic shape of Christian churches, is taken over from pagan town halls. And they're filled with altars, hangings, incense, flowers, hymns, or at least songs, and prayers, all of which have been taken from paganism. But they're wrapped around a completely different theology. Christianity is definitely not just paganism in a different dress. It's a different kind of religion. But festivals are often adapted, particularly those that mark the changing of the seasons. They're turned over to saints from goddesses and gods. And even the gestures by which people pray with raised arms are taken from paganism. So there's an enormous amount of borrowing, but it's external stuff. It doesn't alter the fundamental difference in the new religion.
Following on from that, Louis Palou on Instagram has asked about how did the Christian faith come to adopt these traditions? Was there a particular justification for this?
We have a woeful lack of knowledge about why early Christians did all sorts of things. The only thing approaching a mandate or a philosophy that we have for taking over things from paganism into Christianity is from Pope Gregory the Great in a letter he wrote to a missionary to England at the beginning of the 7th century, in which he says, take over the pagan temples and turn them into churches, take over the pagan festivals and make them Christian. Two things are problematic about this. The first is that such an order is very rare among early Christian leaders. The second is there's no sign that the missionaries paid any attention. We just don't find Anglo-Saxon temples underneath medieval churches anywhere. And where you do find what probably are Anglo-Saxon churches, temples rather, that they've been burned to the ground. And Gregory had sent an earlier letter saying, torch them. He changed his mind later, but it's his earlier directive that seems to have been followed and his later one ignored. It's in Rome itself, Gregory's own place, that after a few hundred years, pagan temples really are turned into Christian churches. But then you don't find yourself, with very few exceptions, going into the entrances of actual pagan temples. It's more that the stone platforms, the foundations, have been used to build churches after the temples have been demolished.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Would you mind providing maybe a few examples of particular festivals that might be recognisable to listeners?
Yes, with pleasure. The most obvious is the festive season par excellence, Christmas, which was after about 3.5 centuries, not before, designated the feast of Jesus' birthday, the Nativity, Christmas. It was put into a gap between two pagan festivals, a space of a few days when nothing was happening, around the 25th of December. And the central thing that was being commemorated, the birth of Jesus with its attendant well-known stories, was utterly different from anything before. But the basic things that we do at a midwinter festival never change. Feasting, decorating the house with cheerful things, lighting it up and warming it up, giving charity to others who can't afford these things, letting your hair down and having fun because there's no wars going on at midwinter and no robbers are out. And going in for divination and blessing for the coming year. And those things will always be there. They were taken straight from paganism to Christianity. They're still the heart of a family Christmas.
Another question from Roberta Alessandra on Facebook is, in the past, have we misattributed traditions that the Christian church has adopted as pagan when they're not in fact pagan traditions?
In the late 19th, early 20th century, there was a favourite game among scholars of trying to spot paganism in all sorts of things, in Christian tradition, in folk customs in particular. And a lot of these guesses turned out to be wrong, even though they were guesses by really influential people. In terms of folk customs, Morris dancing was thought to be a new Stone Age rite to make the crops grow. The mummer's play at Christmas was thought to be a death and resurrection ritual from probably the same time, remote prehistory. We know now that the Morris dance is a late medieval courtly dance that got turned into a popular one into the 16th century and then took its modern forms in the 18th and 19th. We know the mummer's play is an invention of the 18th century that became a craze in the 19th. I think the biggest attempt to paganize Christianity was made by a Cambridge academic who actually turned out to be the most heavily decorated and famous anthropologist of all time, Sir James Fraser, who suggested the whole Christian story was just a mistake for a pagan tradition of dying and resurrecting gods representing vegetation and fertility. He hated religion in general and was out to get Christianity in particular. And it didn't work. He didn't convince most people that this was the case. And indeed, it's not really the case. But he had an influence on a great many people in the 20th century. And Fraser's idea of paganism is all too often the idea of paganism which current people have.
I want to continue and ask for a little bit more definition about paganism. Can we say it was a global thing? Have there been societies which didn't experience any form of pagan belief system? This is from Ado Mohammed on Facebook.
Trying to decide if paganism as a global phenomenon is opening a global can of worms. It's so political. And I, as an individual, can't actually provide an answer to it. The problem is this, that to an impartial observer, Hinduism and Shintoism in particular look pretty well exactly like ancient European paganism, except they're still around. If you go into an ancient Roman temple around about 2,000 years ago, it's pretty well the same architecture, rituals and atmosphere you get in a Hindu temple in India at the present day. So there is a distinct kinship, a similarity. But modern Hindus are very keen, most of them, on not being associated with modern pagans in the West. They see themselves as a continuous ancestral non-Western world religious tradition. And most of them don't actually want to have the P word used of them. And so I simply lay out the debate for you and don't attempt to intervene.
That's completely fine. Thank you very much for answering it, though. It's important to clarify what paganism actually is. So following on from there, from its early roots, how did the use of the word pagan change over time? How did paganism develop?
Paganism remains a bad thing in the eyes of Christians and people in a Christian society until the 18th, 19th century. In the 19th century, most people regard paganism as one of two things. Either it's a religion of bloodshed, gloom, gore, ignorance, savagery, and filth, or else it's the religion of civilized Greece and Rome with the Olympians and the great Greek myths. So it's quite inspiring and beautiful, but lacks the truth and the ethical component of Christianity. But in the 19th century in particular, a steady tradition of countercultural language develops, which begins to see pagan at least as something naughty but nice. If you read Thomas Hardy's novel, The Return of the Native, he uses the word pagan three times, and each time it suggests something slightly dodgy, slightly dangerous, but incredibly sexy. And in the stronger form of this language, paganism is seen as a means of addressing what were becoming regarded as the failings of modern Christianity. In other words, reaching the bits that Christianity didn't reach, the feminism, the love of nature, the belief in an individual ethic of self-improvement and self-reliance, which didn't leave it to deities to take the big decisions.
Did any of this interest come from the Romantic movement?
Practically all the modern interest in paganism comes from the Romantic movement. Romanticism is, in many ways, a realization around about 1800 among a lot of artists, writers, and intellectuals that Europe had just got too much civilization, that it was time to start honouring or at least attaching some value to the things of which mainstream European civilization had always been frightened or had put down: the feminine, over the masculine, the moon over the sun, the wild over the cultivated, the countryside over the city, magic over religion. And at the least, these things were seen as correcting a balance that had tipped too much the other way. And paganism was full of these things, and therefore it could be readily employed as a language to look at the areas, tend the areas, address the areas that had been neglected.
Now, before we carry on down this path, from the earliest roots to the 18th and 19th century, I think we need to talk about this gap in time. What happened to the interest in paganism and paganism itself in this time?
During the whole enormous period from the official conversion to Christianity to the appearance of a modern interest in paganism, there remains an enormous love affair on the part of educated Europeans with the pagan ancient world, so that particularly the Greek and the Roman goddesses and gods, but also the Scandinavian and the Irish, remain beloved figures in literature and art. Devout Christians like Botticelli in the 15th century, Velasquez in the 17th, Lord Leighton in the 19th, would all paint the goddess Venus as an apotheosis of feminine beauty and spiritual allure allied to loveliness. So these never go away. What is different about the modern period is that things that had been pagan and carried on through the Christian centuries as part of the Christian world, like the mythology, the art, the literature, and folk magic, and seasonal festivals with pagan-like things happening in them, like lighting and jumping over bonfires. All these things are put together again, but with a new interest in the old goddesses and gods.
Okay, so coming back slightly towards more modern paganism, when did people first start self-identifying as pagan? When did that come in?
Individuals self-identify as pagan from the late 18th century onwards, from the 1770s, 1780s, but they tend to be odd people out. By the 1810s, you're getting groups like the Romantic poets, like Shelley, and Leigh Hunt and their friends, self-identifying collectively as pagans. We aren't sure how serious they are about it. There could be an element of play-acting involved, but nonetheless, it's sustained play-acting, and it's got a moral and religious program behind it of restoring some of the things to the world which have gone missing since ancient times. So already by the 1810s, people are self-identifying as pagans. The big historical change is it's not until the mid-20th century that people not only do this, but found continuous traditions that people carried on after them. Modern paganism appears at different points in the early 20th century. You get a group of very sincere pagan druids being founded in Australia in the period between the world wars. You get an influential figure founding a Church of Aphrodite in New York in the same period. But really, it's only from the 1950s that you get forms of modern paganism that not only carry on but keep growing and pass on from one generation to another effortlessly. And the oldest and most influential of these is Wicca, which is modern pagan witchcraft, which blends the figures of the pagan priestess or priest with the witch, using the witch in the sense of somebody who has a magical connection to the natural world, and if needed, will try and use this to help people, never to harm them. And these in turn inspired druids to become much more obviously pagan, for shamanism to be brought in from South and Central America and some parts of native North America and brought into the urban Western mainstream. And after that, particular areas of the pagan ancient world, the Egyptians, the Anglo-Saxons, the Romans, to have their paganism revived by smaller but still very determined groups.
So how has society's perception of paganism changed over this time?
I think that there's been three different phases since it reappeared in the 1950s. The first is to condemn it immediately as Satanism, and therefore antisocial, degraded, dangerous, needing to be disapproved or probably wiped out. And that really lasts until the 70s and 80s. By the 70s and 80s, there's a realization that it's here to stay, and it's not satanic, but it's still not terribly respectable. It's kind of on a par with wife-swapping or naturist clubs, you know, things that normal people don't do, but it's not inherently dangerous in itself. And from the 90s onwards, you get a much more prevalent sense in the media, and I think among a lot of people, that paganism in its different forms is a completely acceptable, if not terribly mainstream or serious kind of religion. In other words, religion carried on seriously by rather wacky people. But nonetheless, it's got a right to exist, even if you can't really take seriously somebody who does it. There's a very strong modern sense, if not a very well-phrased one, that there's a connection between paganism and extreme right-wing groups. And it's true that of the Nazi leaders, Heinrich Himmler was interested in ancient German paganism and tried to make it the basis for a mystical society of his SS. But the rest of the Nazis weren't interested. Hitler's regime actually outlawed paganism in Germany, just as it outlawed Freemasonry and nudist clubs and anything that the state couldn't control. So there's one particular branch of the Nazi leadership that is interested in paganism in a selfish kind of way. And there's a general drawing upon ancient pagan myths like that of Brunhilde and Siegfried, all the Wagner stuff, to buttress Nazism. But there isn't really a strong or a central connection between paganism and the Nazis. In some parts of Eastern Europe, in some of the nations newly independent of the Soviet Empire, there's been a reappearance of native pagan religion that is associated with extreme nationalism. But these are really small movements. They are minorities, and they're about as eccentric in their own countries as extreme anti-democratic right-wing movements are in Western countries. And every Western country has one of these. So I don't think there's any inherent connection between paganism and any kind of politics in the present day.
What have been some of the most popular misconceptions surrounding paganism?
There are two types of popular misconceptions surrounding paganism, all of them held naturally enough by people who don't really know pagans or know anything about paganism. There's a soft and a hard form. The soft form is that pagans are people who get naked and dance. And this is simply because in traditional Christian views of paganism, pagans do the things that Christians would never do, like take their clothes off and then dance. As a matter of fact, some modern pagans actually have taken off their clothes and danced, but it's not actually a central and informing theme of paganism. It's living out the myth of a joyous celebration of life without shame for the human body. But as said, it's not central to ancient or modern paganism. The harder misconception of modern paganism is that it's about blood sacrifice. And this is because ancient paganism often was, simply because most people didn't eat meat most of the time. They couldn't afford it. And so a festival was an excuse for a barbecue. And people would gather together, an animal or a group of them would be provided from public funds and humanely slaughtered. It was actually a rule that if an animal brought for sacrifice showed fear or unwillingness, the ritual couldn't happen. It had to be completely unafraid and die without any pain instantly. Otherwise, it wasn't acceptable. And then the indigestible bits were offered up to the deities, and the people barbecued and ate everything else. So it's a consecration of a barbecue. In modern times, that doesn't happen because we can afford, if we wish, to eat meat, fish, high-protein foods all of the time. And also, the attitude to nature has changed. Instead of the natural world being something incredibly big and mysterious and overwhelming and terrifying, it's something we're trying to rescue from ourselves a lot of the time. And so the need that you need to buy off the deities or propitiate them has completely gone. And with it, the need to offer up any sacrifices. Relations between modern pagans and their deities really are more like respectful interactions between friends, one side of the transaction of which is more powerful, or at least better informed and universal than the other side.
So you spoke a little bit there about the connection between ancient paganism and more modern paganism. This is a question from the Postumator on Instagram. Does modern paganism attribute its beliefs and practices to historical paganism, or does it share a closer link with folk tradition? And how far can we really say modern paganism is a modern revival?
Modern paganism picks and mixes, and it's perfectly entitled to do so. It takes deities, certainly, also art, literature, invocations, quotations from ancient sources, but arranges them according to taste and individual need. It also brings in a great deal, for some of it, from ritual magic, from the casting of magical circles and the invocation of spirits. It works a lot with the elements, earth, fire, water, air, which again is a magical tradition. It brings in lots of festivities, ideas, motifs from folklore. And not only each pagan tradition, but often each pagan group will make an exact arrangement of these according to its needs. How much it's a revival is a question of definitions. I think it's unmistakably a revival, but it is a revival of, in many cases, genuinely ancient elements, and certainly genuinely ancient figures. And most religious systems, at some point or another, experience a period of charismatic and widespread renewal. Christianity itself had that great convulsion in the 16th century, which we call the Protestant Reformation, in which about half of Europe's Christians decided they were throwing overboard the previous 1,000 years of Christianity and going back to the ancient basics to start again. And that's kind of what's happened after 2,000 years with modern paganism. It's part of a very widespread religious tradition of renewal and getting back to roots, which it fulfills pretty well exactly.
So how far is the feminist contribution important to modern paganism?
The feminist contribution to modern paganism is really important from the beginning, and it becomes central in the 1980s and since. I say important from the beginning in that the charismatic founding figures of modern paganism tended to be male, but absolutely all of them had women as partners and helpers who contributed massively. And from about 1980, the women basically took over most of modern paganism. After all, ancient paganism had a very important feminine component in the sense that it all had goddesses as well as gods, or a goddess as well as a god, and that some of the times the goddess was the senior partner, was paramount, and therefore it had priestesses as well as priests. So that if you look at the European past, then it's the pagan component, which is the feminist one par excellence.
What would you say is your key takeaway to leave listeners with?
I think that paganism today is just one component of a whole range of religious traditions of varying degrees of age and continuity that make up the modern world. It provides certain things which the others don't do to the same extent in its emphasis on feminism, environmentalism, and an ethic of responsible personal growth and self-choice. Otherwise, it's part of a modern religious landscape, although a very dynamic part at present. And that's kind of all it is.
That was Ronald Hutton, Professor of History at the University of Bristol and expert in British folklore, pre-Christian religion and contemporary paganism. If you're interested in learning more about Christianity's complex relationship with paganism, check out In Our Times episode on paganism in the Renaissance. You can find that now on BBC Sounds. Thanks for listening to the History Extra podcast. This podcast was produced by Daniel Kramer Arden.